I'd like to convene the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. We're going to start with, it's been agreed upon that we'll start with the presentations, and then we'll actually convene a meeting later on when we get a quorum. So just like to invite up our Ms. Trevis, our new acting Commissioner of Labor Relations, and if you could go through our first item on the agenda. So welcome, and welcome aboard. You did a good job in government relations the other day. And
yes.
So go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman and members of the subcommittee. I've been in this acting job for all of 1 week. This is my second time testifying, so bear me out here. We bring to you today the labor contract with the Minnesota Government Engineering Council. This agreement covers about 950 employees, majority of whom work for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. However, we also have engineers that work for Pollution Control Agency, the DNR, and MNSCU. The parties reached an agreement through mediation that concluded in late January, and the council ratified the agreement just recently. The economic terms of this agreement are similar to the contracts with MAPE, AFSCME, and other groups that were approved earlier this session. No general wage increase in fiscal year 2012, a 2% general wage increase effective January 2nd of 2013. We also have progression step increases annually on the employee's anniversary date, which are contingent on satisfactory performance. In this unit, approximately 39% of the employees are eligible for step increases. So that means 61% are at the maximum and receive the general increase only. Health and dental insurance was bargained at coalition, and this unit agreed to the same changes that were agreed to by the other bargaining units. Some increases in the first dollar deductible and co-pays and co-insurance. The parties made a few minor changes in the language, and then there was a modest increase in the amount of reimbursement for dues in professional organizations. I do have the chief negotiator here, Jim Jorstad, if you have any questions regarding the negotiations or any of the language changes.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Trevis at this time? Representative Pepin.
Thank you. Well, maybe Mr. Trevis could just, I always like to hear about kind of the process of negotiation and how you arrive at the percentage you did, because these, again, these contracts that I've seen seem very, very generous in light of the economy. It looks like 39% will get a 6% increase between the across-the-board increase and the step increase, and I'm just wondering how that high, in my view, a very high number was settled on.
Ms. Travis.
Certainly. Chairman Lilly and members of the committee, our progression steps are annual, so the steps were in effect for 12 and 13. Our steps are basically built into the contract, which means that we need to bargain them out of the contract, and we did not this round. So the 39% of this unit that were eligible would have gotten steps, again, contingent on satisfactory performance. The 2% is similar to what we bargained with our other contracts. There was no general increase in fiscal year 2012, and as you may recall, all of the bargaining units, or most of the bargaining units, received 0% and 0% in the prior 2 years, so in 2010 and 2011.
Just allow me to excuse me for a minute. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. Ms. Trevis, I see on number 7 in the sheet we were passed out that employees can also be eligible for achievement awards of up to $1,600. Up to 35% of employees can receive one of these awards. Are those the same in that same subgroup of 39% that are below the maximum, or what group is eligible for the one of those achievement awards?
Chairman and members of the committee, any person in the bargaining unit is eligible for an achievement award. It is not limited to those who are eligible for a step increase. And agencies have certain criteria that they use to determine whether an employee in a bargaining unit that's eligible for an achievement award will actually get an achievement award. And some agencies have criteria that's based on a work on a particular project that they find to be outstanding. It might be that an employee has outstanding performance over a number of months or for the entire year, which they use as criteria to award an achievement award. But again, it is based on performance.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Trebus. But more than one in three can qualify for one of these achievement awards, it looks like. Correct?
That's correct.
And moving down to line 8, we're going to continue to permit engineers to convert up to 40 hours of compensatory time to deferred compensation. What would be the, how does that work out in percentage or average dollar amount to what that qualifies for?
Ms. Travis.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I don't have a precise number of that, but I can certainly get back to you with a number. Up to 40 hours would be essentially a week that they could convert, presuming they have 40 hours in their comp time bank, to deferred comp, which is a way for them to put money towards retirement.
Mr. Dorsted, would he have a?
I don't believe so.
Representative Pepin.
Mr. Chair, and I understand that's a tough number to calculate because it depends on what the salary is, but is that in addition to the deferred comp and that I imagine employees already can put in deferred, because this is just for compensatory time, so what would be the percentage that they're already allowed to put in deferred comp outside of this?
I believe that in this, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I believe that this contract has a match of up to $300 per year, and that means that if they put in $300 of their own into deferred comp, the state will match $300 or up to $300. So if I put in $200, the state would match $200. And then in addition, we have the conversion of comp time to deferred compensation.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. I just have one more question. Thank you. What would be then, just kind of looking at, you've got potential 6% on the first page and some other dollar amounts. What would be the maximum percent increase that someone under these contracts could get if they qualified for a few of these? Do you know what that might be?
Ms. Travis.
Or could you get that?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I couldn't tell you what the dollar amount is, but it would be the, as you said, the 6% plus the 2% general increase, which is effective January 2nd of 2013.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. I wasn't going to, just to follow up to understand. So an 8% would be the maximum increase they could get? Is that what you're saying?
I believe this, you said 6%. I believe actually the steps in this contract may be 4% per year. So if we take 4% the first year, 4% the second year, and then the general increase of 2% effective January 2nd of 2013.
Representative Pepper.
I'm looking for a total. So are you saying that it's 10% would be the total?
Ms. Travis.
Plus there's some additional dollar amounts if you could add those on to whatever the percentage is because they don't have a percent.
And Mr. Chair and members of the committee, it's a little difficult to say it's 10% because it's 4% in the first year and then 4% in the second year, which is 4% over that base. And then 2% on that. So it doesn't match up completely with 10%. There's a little bit of a difference because of the compounding. But if you just did raw numbers, it would be 10%, and then the other benefits that are in the contract and have been in the contract for a number of years.
Ms. Pepin.
Sorry. Including the $1,600 that they could be eligible for, correct?
Ms. Travis.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, yes, assuming that they were nominated for and were awarded an achievement award, that is true.
Thank you.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Travis, you mentioned that there wasn't any increases in 10 or 11. Did this unit receive a step increase in 2011 like many of the other did?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, yes, they did receive a step in the second year of the 2009-2011 contract.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Travis, I thought so. The compensatory time that Representative Pepin was talking about, do we know what the average salary is of the people in this unit?
Ms. Travis.
I don't have that number. I will see if I have it in the materials that I brought with me. But if I don't have it with me, I can certainly get that to you, Representative Drazkowski.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Travis. One last question, Ms. Travis.
Do you want that? What's that? Do you want her to get the information?
I think she's going to get it later, right?
I can get it to you.
Okay. Thank you. So Ms. Travis, the last question, as you know, over the last several years, we have seen the private sector continue on a path. They're starting to merge out of it now, but a path that took private sector employers and their employees into positions in which they had to have some very substantial layoffs of employees, and those employers that were able to keep their employees employed found need to stop bringing forward health insurance benefits for them, to bring forward real cuts. The employers I talk to in my district are talking 10, 20, 30% real cuts in salary. So my question to you, has this unit ever, in your knowledge, received a compensation decrease in its history? I've asked that of the others, and so far to this point, I've not become aware of a state employee group that has received an actual decrease in their compensation like the private sector has certainly recently, and I would expect has other times in our history as well. So I'm curious if you've noticed that about this unit in its history.
Ms. Travis.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I have been with the state of Minnesota since 1998, and at least in that history, there has not been a wage decrease in the engineering unit.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Travis. That's what I thought. Mr. Chair, is there a motion before us? There's not a motion before us yet.
There's no motion.
Okay.
I'm just going to kind of proceed and with the other, because they're both together in the motion, so I thought we should go through the other part of the bill.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'd just like to roll call it when the time comes when we can officially do that.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski, and we'll certainly grant that. Any more questions for Ms. Travis? Thank you. Good job.
Thank you.
You seem like you're natural at this, so
have to be.
Just for the sheer excitement of this committee, we have a few more contracts that are, I think, out there. Is there three more?
Mr. Chair, there are two more.
There's two more, so I don't know that we'll... Will we have those in, Mr. Hubinger, before?
Mr. Chair, there is a tentative agreement with the two-year faculty at the community colleges that we'll hear likely later, mid-April. Okay. It's unlikely we'll hear the contract with the Law Enforcement Association.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Mr. Dale, are you please come forward and state your name for the record and go ahead and tell us about the other part of the contracts that have been settled.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Chris Dale. I'm the Senior System Director for Labor Relations with the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I'm here to report on the agreement reached with the Minnesota State University Association of Administrative and Service Faculty. I have with me today in the audience Bill Brady, who was the chief negotiator for MNSCU with respect to this contract. So if there are difficult questions that arise with respect to the contract or the actual negotiations, I will call upon Mr. Brady to assist me. The bargaining unit is the union representing, the exclusive representative representing this unit is sometimes referred to as MUSAF, and so just because for comfort level, I'll refer to them as MUSAF. That's the acronym for their title. The bargaining parties reached a settlement on January 29th, and our board approved the union ratified this agreement in March, and then our board approved this agreement yesterday. So it is to you today, hot off the press. The agreement is similar to the other faculty contract that I've already presented to you at the hearing on March 11th. It provides in fiscal year 12, there are no general increases, no step increases. There is a lump sum of $400 that will be paid, a one-time lump sum paid to the faculty in lieu of those increases for fiscal year 2012. In fiscal year 2013, there's a schedule enhancement of 1.9% effective on July 1, 2012, and a one-step increase for those unit members who are returning to the unit from work during fiscal year 2012. And the steps in this unit average approximately 3% across the schedules. There is a lump sum available, one-time lump sum paid to those ASF members who will be at the top, who are at the top of the range. Approximately 10% of the unit is at the top of the range. We are, of course, have agreed to the insurance program as negotiated by MMB with the coalition for both years of the contract. We have agreed to increase the professional development funds available system-wide to this unit to a total of $500,000, and the increase was $50,000 during FY 2013. I should note that the unit is approximately a 750 headcount and approximately the same number in terms of FTE. They work exclusively at the state universities, and they tend to these employees work with student programs, the delivery of student programs, or in the departments and program areas that deliver those student programs, things like financial aid, the residence halls, those types of positions. A number of in language changes were made, and I'll just highlight a couple of those for you today. We were able to negotiate an expansion of the types of situations in which fixed-term appointments could be used, and to provide for an additional year of fixed-term service that is currently limited to 2 years in the contract and a third year upon agreement with ASF. And we also we've had a number of issues over the years with respect to externally funded, sometimes referred to as soft monies. As you know, at the state universities, there are often grants that are obtained that fund programs. Employees in this unit often work in those programs, and there's a special appointment type for employees who work in those programs with what we call that soft money or that grant-funded money. And there have been a number of issues over the years with respect to questions concerning the amount of such soft money that must be part of the program to support these positions, and the exact nature of that soft money, where the grant money is originating from. And we were able to negotiate clarifications to that, so we hope to end those issues with respect to these externally funded appointment types, which are useful appointment types for the employer. And I will stand for questions with respect to the.
Thank you, Mr. Dale. Any questions from Mr. Dale? Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dale, on number 11 on the sheet here, talks about a separation incentive for employees of 15 years of service who are at least 55. receive up to a year's salary upon retirement. Is Minsky currently doing a reduction in force with this particular people in this particular area, or is this just provided as a benefit?
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, this particular provision is the early separation incentive is a discretionary incentive, and it is also a declining benefit that is allowed under the Safe Harbor under the Education Act. But we are not currently experiencing a declining in force. I think we've done that in the last couple of years prior to fiscal year 13. However, the language has been in the agreement for a long time, but in the 1995-97 negotiations, we did negotiate a change to the benefit so that this particular benefit so that it's discretionary with the institution. So it's not always provided at an institution. It depends on the particular circumstances of the institution.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Dale, how is it applied? I mean, I would expect, you know, the nature of a union is that everybody in the union wants to be treated equally and the same. How is this applied?
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, it's difficult for me to say without a particular reference to. I don't know the particulars of any given year at any one of the seven state universities. I can tell you with certainty that there have been occasions when a state university will say we simply cannot afford to do these this year, and doesn't do them, and they make that clear at the beginning of the year typically, and then they're not done. But I think the standards are dependent on the availability of the workforce and the needs to continue with the workforce, that is the desire to separate employees and the availability of funds.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Dale. The same question I had for Ms. Travis, you know, we've had the private sector has experienced real compensation decreases in the last 4 or 5 years. In the history of this particular bargaining unit, are you familiar with any compensation decreases that happened during that time?
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, I've been with the system since 1996, and I would think it's fair to say that individual employees have not, during that time period, been asked to take a compensation decrease. But it is the case, and it was a factor, I think, in these negotiations, that in the last round of negotiations, this unit, and we reported those numbers to the subcommittee, actually had negative numbers on its base rate increases. So they were negative base rate increases and negative tail increases, the so-called biennium over biennium number. That is that those monies actually went down for this unit because they took a hard freeze in the last round of negotiations. There were no step increases. There were no across-the-board increases. The only way an employee in the unit was able to secure an increase was actually promoting to securing a different job that was in a different salary range. There are five ranges in the unit. So I think the answer on an individual basis is no to your question, but I think on the unit basis the answer is during the last round of negotiations they experienced an actual decrease in the overall spending.
Representative Drazkowski, just kind of in fairness, you know, these folks, you know, many of the state workers and throughout the system weren't, they got kind of some time off that we gave them, you know, in the last couple of years here. So, I mean, they've kind of taken a pay cut during that time. I mean, they really wasn't their choosing. It was stuff that our team did, you know, our collective team as legislators and the governor, you know, they were out of work for a little bit. So, you know, that's certainly a pay cut. It's not probably what you're talking about, but it's an impact on their pay. And, you know, I work for a big company, and we actually had a pay cut, but it's bumped back, and it's, you know, so we've had raises, and, you know, so this is pretty closely tied to the private market. I mean, and I get some quite decent perks of different sorts and or incentives to keep, you know, us as employees working. So I don't know. That's just one company. It's not a industry-wide or worldwide impression, but it's certainly a real market one of the bigger employers in the state of Minnesota. So, anyways, Representative Drazkowski, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it just...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to enter into an argument with you, but, you know, I would guess that in your company, if you are told that the company is not going to be operating for 3 weeks or for a month, I would suspect they're probably not going to pay you for work you didn't do. And, you know, I'll leave it at that. Mr. Dale, so what you are telling me is that there was a decrease in the increase, kind of government speak, if you will, given the baseline. But we don't know that there was actual decreases in the pay of the employee group, actual to next contract.
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, I apologize if I wasn't very clear, and so let me try to be clearer. We report certain numbers to the subcommittee that we're expected to report each year, and one of the numbers that we report is the biennial cost of the contract, and another number that we report to the subcommittee is the biennium over biennium cost of the contract. Those expected costs in the last contract we reported for this particular unit were negative numbers. That is, the biennial cost of the contract was expected to go down last time, and the biennium over biennium costs, sometimes referred to as the tails, also went down. And that's because the unit actually did experience a hard freeze, and the people in the unit who tended to be senior left, and they were replaced by people with lower salaries.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think I'm getting the gist of what you're saying, Mr. Dale. Because of those lower cost positions or salaries, the contract cost went down, but we didn't have salary decreases for those who were on board, and that's what I understand. Thank you.
Representative Eaton.
I'd like to move SCR1.
Thank you. Senator Eaton has moved SCR1. Any other questions?
It's for both of them.
They're both in. Both contracts are included in the one motion. It's a little different than it was last time. They were two separate motions. So, if you have any questions, Representative Pepin.
Yeah, I have several questions. Thanks, Mr. Dale, and please thanks for entertaining questions for me. I'm new to this committee this year, so I do need to kind of get some background information to catch up a little bit. I wanted to go back to Representative Drazkowski's question about the year's salary upon retirement, and I wasn't completely sure I followed all of that discussion, and you talked about it being discretionary, and I'm wondering what circumstances might this be given. I can see, you know, based on certain market conditions where it might be necessary, but I'm wondering if you could talk about some kind of circumstances, and then when they are used, when you say discretionary, do you mean discretionary in that they can be used in 1 year, but they don't have to be used in every year, or did you mean discretionary and some people can be offered it and some can't be offered it?
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, if I might go with the last part of your question first, I meant discretionary. I meant both. They are discretionary, and the employer does not have to award them, and does not have to award them in a year, and does not have to award them to a particular employee. But as to the circumstances, this particular benefit was in the contract to be in the first place as a means of providing for a certain amount of turnover for employees who were tending to reach the top of their salary schedule. So it was an early separation incentive. It was a declining benefit, and as I mentioned, that is actually protected under the safe harbor provisions of the Higher Education Act, so that we can have a declining benefit like that, so that employees who advance in age once they become eligible actually experience a decrease in the amount of the benefit. So it's a stimulus for those who can afford to do so to retire. The circumstances, it's hard for me to speak to the particular circumstances without knowing, you know, without actually speaking to one of our state universities and saying what were the circumstances in, for example, fiscal year 2010 that caused you or didn't cause you to award the early retirement incentive. But generally speaking, it has to do with the availability of the funds and a look at the profile of the workforce that the state university has and whether it's interested in incenting the employees to separate or whether it would just as soon keep those particular tend to, which those employees that tend to be higher paid employees on board.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. That's helpful. I have got a few more questions, but perhaps it would help me understand this a little bit more. Do you have, I don't know if you have it with you or not, I'm just trying to get an average salary of this type of employee and how much they make, so that helps me understand the numbers a little bit more. Do you have that available, or could you give a kind of an estimate?
Mr. Dale.
I don't know, Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, I don't know off the top of my head the average salary for this particular unit. The unit includes a diverse set of work types, and there's five separate salary ranges, so there's quite a diversity in salaries. If I had to guess, I would guess that the average salary is in the low 50s, but I don't know for certain.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. That's helpful to kind of start out my questions. So I just want to make sure I understand this. So number two, so everybody gets a 1.9% one-time increase, and then those who are eligible would get a 3% step increase as well, so that's almost a 5%. And then the faculty who are at the top of their range would get $2,000. I'm trying to figure out what kind of percentage would that be, and I just want to make sure I'm understanding it right. So a good portion of people, it looks like, would get close to 5%. Do you know how many are eligible to get that 3% increase?
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin. Approximately 10% of the unit is at the top of the range, so are not eligible to get that 3%, and approximately 90% of the unit is not at the top of the range. However, I have to remind, it's important to remember, that this is a return step, so there's the additional factor that not everybody in the unit this year was actually working in the unit last year. So there's it would be slightly lower than the 90% of, because there would be new folks who would not be eligible for the step increase, but would experience the schedule enhancement of 1.9%.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. So do they get how does this work? Do they get a 3% step each year, or is it 3% for the two-year period?
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin. In the faculty contracts at MNSCU, we negotiate steps each year. So in this particular contract that is before you, the employees would receive a step in the second year of the contract, but there would be no step increase in the first year of the contract, just as there was not a step increase in the 2 years preceding that.
Thank
Representative
you.
Pepin.
And do you know approximately those that 10% that get that lump sum of $2,000, do you know about what percentage that would be, what percentage of a – I'm trying to compare it to the step increase and figuring out if – I know it's difficult because they're making different ones, but I'm trying to get an idea. I don't know what kind of the top 10% average would be that would – what kind of percentage that $2,000 would work out to, if you
Mr.
can
Dale.
Ballpark it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin. I don't know exactly, but I believe that the $2,000 was crafted to be approximately equivalent to the 3% for those people who would be eligible.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. That answers my question there. And then on number three, I again, this is probably just because I'm new to this this committee. Can you talk a little bit about the Professional Development Fund and what exactly that's used for?
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, these are employees that work with student programs in state universities, and there is a professional development continuing to keep current in one's field is a particularly high value at the state universities. This fund is allocated to each of the state universities based on FTE, and the employees in the unit make proposals as to what they might do in terms of professional development, so be it attending a conference or attending some sort of course or class. They make proposals, and then they propose to be reimbursed for that activity through the professional development funds.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hill. So it could be used for getting a master's degree, perhaps? Are there limits, I guess I'm wondering? Can I get a law degree? Can I get a doctorate degree through this fund?
Representative Pepin's about ready to be a new lawyer in a couple days here, I think, right?
Yeah, so I'm just trying to get in on that.
You might have a new professor.
I'm just trying to figure out if they're...
Mr. Dale.
If it's just you know, courses or whatnot, if it's actually degrees that they can work toward.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin. Well, of course, there's a practical limit. The amount of money that's available on a practical basis is about $600 per annum per employee.
Okay.
And when I went to law school, the tuition was relatively modest. Nowadays, it has changed, and that wouldn't get you very much in terms of a law degree or another advanced degree. But it is fair to say that if the courses that they propose to take are related to their field of work, that it would be it's likely the school would deem it appropriate to reimburse them for that, to the extent that their professional development funds are available to them.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. That's helpful. And then skipping down to number 6, it says continue to match an employee's contribution to a supplemental retirement account to a maximum of $2,200. I'm just wondering how that maximum is determined. Is it based on a percentage, and then what would the percentage be?
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, the cap of the $2,200 cap is determined by a negotiated cap, but a certain percentage is taken out of each paycheck, each pay period, after the first $6,000 of pay per fiscal year. It's kind of an odd structure, but it is established in statute, so that the supplemental retirement account, the parameters of the program, the benefit, are set forth in statute, and we negotiate the cap on the total amount that we will match.
Okay.
There's a statutory cap that is in excess of this $2,200. I believe the current statutory cap is $2,700, but we haven't negotiated that with this unit, and so the current cap is $2,200.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Going on to number 7, the Exceptional Achievement Program can go up to 10%, can get up to a 5% payment on the employee's salary if they meet specific requirements. So then would it be safe to say that in addition to the, I think it was almost 5%, 4.9%, so some employees could actually get a 9.9% increase with this contract in addition to maybe some other perks, including the number 8, the 5,000. Is that accurate?
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, it's probably hypothetically or theoretically possible. There actually haven't been any special achievement awards in the last 3 fiscal years.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. So have there been, so there has, that was Exceptional Achievement Program, you said, have there been any special initiative award programs? And if so, it says individually or as a group. And then it says the maximum is $5,000, but there it doesn't specify if that's $5,000 per group or is that per person.
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, the Special Initiative Award, I don't recall the answer, and I could call on Mr. Brady to answer the question you had with respect to whether it is limited to $5,000 for the entire group. I believe the answer is yes, but Mr. Brady can give us the exact answer. It is the case that we have provided some special initiative awards over the last several years. We provided 2 of these awards in fiscal year 2012, and we provided 5 of them in 2011, and approximately 30 in fiscal year 2010.
Representative Pepin, would you like...
Thank you. Well, he doesn't have to come up. I just was wondering, is it per group or individual?
Per award.
Per award, so an individual. So then...
Right. It would be an individual, or it could be divided between the individuals within comprising the group that would receive that award.
Representative Pepin.
So then, theoretically, and I know you said that this hasn't happened, but theoretically, the maximum then could be really 9.9% increase possible plus a $5,000 lump sum if they were to get one of these special awards.
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, I'm not sure that that is theoretically possible. I think because the fact that the amount of effort that would be required to actually secure yourself a special initiative award perhaps preclude actually engaging with the special achievement award. But I won't deny that it's, I suppose, as a matter of discussion, possible to conceive of an employee that could do those things.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But but that would be without the special, the exceptional achievement program. It would just, I was just adding the base, the step, and then the special initiative award. I didn't include the exceptional achievement award program in my theoretical number.
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin. Yes, it is possible that an employee could get the special achievement award. And in addition to the compensation increases that are provided for under the contract.
Thank you.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. And then on number 9, I've seen this before too, the tuition waiver for employees for up to 27 credits per year. Is that pretty common throughout the industry for employees to get credits?
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin. We haven't done a survey, formal survey on this, but it is fairly common for colleges and universities to provide some sort of benefit akin to this. Sometimes it's a benefit, as is ours, where you can use the benefit internally, and then with other colleges and universities, they provide a benefit, essentially a cash equivalent, that the employee or the employee's family may use at any university. We don't do that, but we do provide this benefit internally within the state universities.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate that because I know we did see another contract that had that on, and I thought that was a little excessive. I think I just have one more question. That would be going back to number 2, and it says effective July 1st, 2012. And again, this, I wasn't on the SER last year, but what I'm curious of is, my understanding is that this committee rejected the contract in August of last year, and here it says effective July 1st, which would have been even before the rejection happened, and I'm trying to kind of understand how that's possible.
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, this contract has not been before the committee before. It was not rejected, but so it was negotiated, and the negotiations were completed for the first time on January 29th. It was simply negotiated as a negotiated feature of the contract to provide for an across-the-board increase effective at the beginning of the fiscal year, the second fiscal year of the contract.
Mr. Huebinger, those were the bills that we passed in our first grouping that went through and the governor signed into law, was the ones that were actually didn't pass in the committee. So these are like separate contracts. But it's a very good question because
I'm new.
It's
hard for me to, as a new person on the committee, to understand how we're retroactively going back to July 1st of last year when it was actually a contract was rejected. So I'm just trying to figure out how that works. Do you have a better explanation for that, Mr. Huebinger?
Mr. Huebinger.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin. This round of contracts that's being negotiated is for the current biennium that began on July 1st of 2012, and the contracts are all retroactive to that date, and that's been the pattern practice for 25 years.
And then Mr. Huebinger,
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. And then Mr. Huebinger, so the again, and I wasn't on it, so the contract that was rejected in August was not this contract.
Mr. Huebinger.
Mr. Chen, Representative Pepin, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you. That's all the questions I have. Do we have a roll call down for both of these? And
yes. Earlier, Representative Drazkowski asked for a roll call on SER1. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one question. Mr. Dale, the 27 credits per year on number 9, any idea what a credit costs in Minsky, what the value is? If you're not a member or if you're not an employee?
No, it isn't. Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski. I don't know the exact number. I think it's about $135 a credit, but I have to say it's been a couple of years since I've actually looked at that. If I may try to provide a little addition, it's been very difficult for us to try to determine a cost for this particular item, this particular benefit, because I think if you think about it, you see the problems in that typically these programs are set up so that the faculty member or their dependent can only take the class if there's a space available. And so we're talking about maybe a marginal cost, but the class would go on anyway. So it's presented a particularly thorny issue for us with respect to costing, and it's been very difficult for us.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Dale. I guess we could simply look in the catalog to one of the Minsky institutions to come up with that, I would expect. Wouldn't they have them printed there?
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, they would have the per-credit cost printed in the contract. But and I'm sorry if I wasn't clear. I was trying to state the point that it's difficult for us to know what our cost is as an employer in providing the benefit, because typically these classes on a space available basis only, and the class would go on anyway. So we have a fixed cost from our perspective, but the employee is getting a benefit, and there's no doubt about that. And so my point was to say it's been difficult for us to compute an exact cost that is actually reflective of the employer's costs, as opposed to reflective of what the employee gets the benefit of.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Dale, it's only on space available, so if they want to exercise the benefit and there's not space available, they're out of luck. Is that right?
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, in theory, they are out of luck.
Representative Drazkowski.
I think I'll give up now, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. I'm sorry. That kind of triggered another question for me. Mr. Dale, I see that it's 735 faculty, and you list some admissions, financial aid, housing, and student service positions, but after Representative Drazkowski talked about the tuition, it just kind of triggered another thought in my mind, and that is I'm not sure the level of professional background in any of these positions, but I guess what I'm really getting at is I'm wondering if students are generally make up part of this part of the full-time faculty in any of these. So, for example, if I were a freshman student, but I also worked full-time in the admissions office, would then I be eligible to get 27 credits per year as well? Or does that not? Would it not be student workers that would be part of this group?
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, these are not student workers. These are professional employees. They're typically master's prepared. It is the case that there are a handful, and I mean literally, you could probably count them on your hands, of non-exempt employees in the unit. But the vast, vast majority of this unit are salaried employees that are exempt. They don't collect overtime. They don't get the benefit of the comp bank or anything like that. They're professional employees.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Seeing none, Mr. Hubinger, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Lilly?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Hillstrom?
Aye.
Representative Pepin?
No.
Representative Winkler?
Aye.
Senator Benson?
No.
Senator Chamberlain? Absent. Senator Eaton?
Yes.
Senator Metzen? Absent. Senator Saxog?
Yes.
Five to three, the ayes have it. SCR1 is passed. Just like to thank you, Mr. Dale and Ms. Travis, for your presentation. Thank our engineer workers and our Minnesota State University workers as well. So with that, we are adjourned. Okay.